Good morning, Holland Zeeland. You're listening to WHTC Money Matters. This is Kerry Cooley.
And this is Jack Godfrey. Today's show is pre-recorded for November 30th. It's a show designed to help you with your annual financial checkup. And Kerry and I are going to be talking about that in all of our segments today because we have a very limited show because we usually talk about the numbers and some fun facts that we get during the week. But we have questions first, and these are questions that people write in. These are questions that we get asked during the week. And the best thing, if you have a question, you could call our office at 616-931-1223. Extension 4 is Janet. She will take your question. You don't need to say your name. She'll take your question, and we'll read that question and give you an answer on the radio.
Yep. Or you can email us, and that email address is Cooley Godfrey. That's KOELEGODFREY at LPL.com. And that way you can get us a question, and we will respond to that question and or take it on the air. Sometimes we do both.
Yeah, right. I mean, sometimes we get a lot of questions during the week. Hey, I've heard you on the radio. What about this? Or why'd you say this? Or I think you were wrong about this. We always, you know, if I'm wrong about something, I call everybody back that is, you know, ask us about that question.
Oh, absolutely. And, you know, if somebody says, hey, you know, I heard a great show this past week, you can actually go, if you missed the show, you can go to listen to the show on WHTC website or to our personal website, which is Cooley Godfrey at...
No, it's just www.cooleygodfrey.com.
Yeah,
are you confused?
Right. Yeah, I'm confused today.
All right.
I'm thinking
right.
It's Thanksgiving.
I know. Here's the first question. We always try to get to a Social Security question. First question this week, will my spouse and children continue to receive Social Security benefits when I die?
And the answer is yes, but there are some rules that have to be followed.
Well, there is some rules, and you have to be, you know, you need to qualify. Mm-hmm. You just don't get Social Security because who you are. You get it because you qualify. So, you know, we always say, what is the minimum to qualify? And the minimum to qualify is 40 credit hours, 40 credits, not 40 credit hours, but 40 credits, which is really 40 credits, quarters, or 10 years.
10 years. Yeah, and so you get one credit per quarter if you have enough hours and earnings. And then if you have your 40 credits, you qualify.
Yeah, and it doesn't have to be. You can have 5 years here, 1 year here, take off 10 years, and then get, you know, three or four more credits some other time, or years some other time. So it doesn't need to be continuous. You know, so if you work one quarter, take three off, that's how that works. So children may qualify up to 75%. That's the typical number of Social Security benefits based on the record of the contributions. I mean, this is not an exact dollar amount. How much you put in, that's how much credit you get up to children 18 or 19 if they're still in high school. Many kids are still 19 or just turned 19 while they're in high school. As for a spouse, her reduction is about 71.5 of the benefits, and that's as early as age 60. Now, as I was saying before, Kerry, is my mom took benefits when she was 60. My dad was 65. I was actually 63 when he died, so my mom actually took my dad's Social Security at 60 because living on a farm, my dad took all the Social Security benefits for himself, and then she took Social Security based on 60. And, you know, she's 91 now, so she's been collecting for 31 years.
That's awesome. So how old were you when your dad passed away?
Well, you know, my dad passed away in 83, okay. You know, so I was 32.
32, and
yeah.
Your mom was...
My mom was still milking cows, so, you know, my dad, so he was 58 when my dad died. She milked cows up until 65, you okay. know, by herself. You know, that's pretty good.
Yeah, wow. Yeah. All right. Yeah, and so, you know, the benefits for your spouse and kids can also be limited by a family maximum, so,
yep.
Which is the maximum amount that can be paid from your earnings record. So, you know, there is, you know, numbers, and there is, you know, maximums, and there's caps that they put on this stuff, you know. So for more details, really go to the Social Security Administration website, and that's socialsecurity.gov.
Yep, SSA.gov. I mean, if you want to go there. So let's go to the next question. I heard you talking about making beneficiaries my grandkids and skipping my kids. Why should I do that when I know my grandkids will just spend it? Well, that's a great thing because I was talking on the show maybe 2 or 3 months ago where I convinced a grandmother who had an IRA inherited from her husband, never needed the IRA, only took the minimum distribution. And the kids, her two children, two daughters, did not need the money. So they each had two kids, so four grandkids were getting grandma's IRA, which is those kids were in their early 40s, and you have to take IRAs out by 111. That's how you need to take money out by. So we're talking about multiple generations, and this was she converted from an IRA to Roth, paid the tax on it. We did this over a number of years.
And granted, since she was in a lower tax bracket, she paid lower overall taxes.
Oh, very, very low rates compared to her grandchildren. Three out of the four understood what the Roth was, understood the benefits of passing it on to yourself, your spouse, your kids. But one said, just send me the cash. And I just couldn't get it through his head that he just wanted the cash. And he had this deferral for umpteen years. I mean, unbelievable. And I still, to this day, do not understand if he just didn't get it or he was just so stubborn that he thought he could invest the money better. And if he could have, then he should have just transferred the decedent Roth IRA.
And keep it in the decedent IRA.
So it's a great waste, but you know we would have then said, okay, for 25% of this money, we should have just kept it as the two kids of the beneficiary and passed it on to them because they truly understood what we were doing with mom. Mm-hmm. So I mean, there's a lot of things in terms of passing on money to your kids, your grandchildren, your great-grandchildren. What are they going to do with it? And if they're not going to do appropriately, it's your money. I mean, you're setting these things up. And if you're not setting this up according to your wishes because it's your money and what you think that money should be used for, then you need to put in the right bucket.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you really need to put in the right bucket.
Well, and especially, and you can change beneficiaries. If
yeah,
you
oh,
feel
yeah.
that
yeah.
person that is down there is a beneficiary, you can come back and change that. If you feel that Johnny or Elizabeth or whoever is going to inherit this money and they don't deserve it, you can change. You can change where that goes.
You know, I've done this with lots of clients, Kerry, where we've convinced grandma or grandpa to pay the taxes, you know, have the kids inherit this money forward, pass it on forward. But each of these cases, I've actually met with grandpa and grandma with the grandchildren. And grandpa and grandma are, you know, kind of shaking their finger. This is what I want you to do with it. In this case, kids were in four different states. I did not get the opportunity to meet with them,
yeah.
with grandma there.
Yep.
So, you know, I tell people I screwed up.
Yeah.
Well,
it does
up.
Make a difference when they're there in person and grandpa and grandma are there saying, and it's amazing when you have a family meeting like that and grandpa and grandma say, hey, this is what we want you to do with the money, and the grandkids listen then.
Yeah, well, yeah.
They absolutely do.
Yep. So that's a great question, great thing to bring it up on the air is it's always good to know the customers going forward, and it's also good for grandparents and, you know, parents of kids to say, okay, you know, to be training them throughout their life of how to be good stewards of money, passing on ideals, passing on family heritage, and passing on what it takes to create family wealth. I mean, what does it take to create family wealth? I mean, that's just what you should be doing.
Yeah.
And so, you know, here's the next question. I get so many papers in the mail from my brokerage firm. What should I keep? What should I throw away?
Yeah, and that's true. I mean, we get that question a lot, don't we, Jackie, is what to keep. For sure, you want to keep your statements. Some statements come monthly. Some statements come quarterly. And then at the end of that year, I usually keep my year-end statement. And I don't keep every month then. My year-end has a summary of the whole year on it. As far as confirmations, those are when you buy or sell something. You want to keep those for your records, too, so that when you bought something, you know what the cost and what you paid for that, because you'll need that possibly later on for taxes if it's in a non-retirement account.
Right. Yeah.
So it's very important. Other things that you get from mutual fund companies, their annual report, their prospectus, those are required to be sent out by the Securities Exchange Commission. I know that to cut back on costs, these companies now offer that, and the Securities Exchange Commission has offered it too, that you can now receive these annual reports, these prospectuses, and updates. You can receive those via email. So those are some ways, but you have to sign up for that to get that stuff via email. So if you want to reduce some of the papers, that's one way you can reduce some of the papers that come to you, but the statements still will come to you via mail.
Yeah, I mean, that's really good. You know, we help clients kind of get through that. You know, some of our older clients, they just bring in their stuff. you know, they just bring in our stuff, and that just works out well. So, all right, so let's go on to our show. Carrie, do we have that number cannot be right, but maybe it is. So we are on to our show. Our show today is going to be annual financial checkup. And, you know, this is something that we try to do, you know, usually once a quarter, but annually it's always good to review all of these things. And, you know, what would cause you to do it more than just annually is things, life events that happen.
Mm-hmm.
Life events that happen. That could be a lot of things.
Yeah, some of those life events can, you know, and that's really a good question, you know, that we could include here is how often should you do it? And life events such as death, a disability, a marriage, a divorce, are just a few things to...
Oh, job change. I mean, you're doing jobs, you got to roll over your money. You know, I just today... Again, this is a pre-recorded show for November 30th. Today, you know, I have a single client. He's 57. He has his parents as his beneficiaries. And his parents are in their 80s.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, he has large IRAs. And, you know, I'm going to review with him here in a couple days. Actually, it's tomorrow. I'm going to review this with him. It's like, you need to put nieces or nephews on this account. You're losing all the stretchability of the IRAs over multiple generations. He doesn't have a trust, so maybe we need to convince him to do a trust, and that's how the money's going to be distributed. But, you know, to give this money to your parents, it loses, you know, all that stretchability for years. So if he's going to leave his parents money, if that's the concern, I know his parents have a lot of money, so it doesn't make sense all the way around. It's got to be brothers, sisters, charity, or nieces or nephews,
mm-hmm.
or grandnieces or nephews.
Yeah, and then there are people, there are clients that we have out there that, you know, have never been married. You know, they have sisters, but where's this money going to go? But if they plan it out in a sensible way, our former landlady, she did this. She sat down with a company called Barnabas, and they went through her will and trust and helped her. And, you know, she has part of it going to nieces and nephews. She has part of it going to charities and a lot of different areas. But she got it done in that way because they have no children.
Mm-hmm. Nope. So, hey, we're talking about annual financial checkups. We just talk about, you know, what would cause you not to have more of a checkup, and those would be life-changing events. As, again, marriage, job change, divorce, children, grandchildren, changing businesses or starting a new business, all those things would, you would adjust potentially some or all of your financial documents, your trust documents, et cetera.
Yeah. Well, hey, you know, that's a good point that we can take a nice break here and we can get more into details on your annual financial checkup. We're going to be right back after this short break. You're listening to WHTC Money Matters. This is Carrie Cooley.
And Jack Godfrey. We'll be right back.
Welcome back, listeners. This is Carrie Cooley.
And this is Jack Godfrey. Today's show is going to be annual financial checkup. It's pre-recorded for the Thanksgiving weekend, which is really late this year, November 30th. So pre-recorded our show. We're talking about annual financial checkups. And, you know, we're going to go through this of, you know, reviewing your financial goals. You know, what kind of progress have you made? And, you know, I have children that are 27, five of them, 27 through 37. And I've given them goals of you should be saving 16% of your gross income.
That's a pretty high
Those
number.
Are big numbers.
Yeah.
Those are big numbers. But that's, you know, a husband and wife both working, that's what you should be saving because they have the ability to do that. Those are big numbers. But if you do that all of your life, those are big numbers.
Mm-hmm.
You'll have big numbers.
Yeah, you'll definitely have big numbers. Now, what made you tell them 16%?
Well, because I read a lot of books. I read a lot of books on financial planning and stuff. And they said, if you can do this all of your life and you budgeted, things will be good. You know, some people do 3 because that's the match they get. Some people do 6 because they'll match up to, you know, half of your 6%, which is 3. But if you just budget all of your life 16%, you could have a great, great retirement. That's a lot of money. But if you can do that, it turns out to be big.
Now, what would you say to those people that Jack, you know, I can't save 16%. I'm making only $40,000 a year. I have a wife and two kids.
Well, that's a good point, Gary. You know, it's, you know, people think sometimes we always talk about wealthy people, and we actually don't. But some people who make $40,000 aren't saving anything.
Yep, that's true.
And, you know, if you're working someplace, most people, not all people, have retirement plans. And I would say most, again, not all, have matching programs where if you put in three, they'll at least match three. Now, that's 100% return on your money. So you have to start someplace. So if you can just get the match, get the match. Now, if you get a, if you get any type of raise, your raise should be added on top of that 3%. So every time you think of you get an annual raise or a semi-annual raise, you need to take some of that raise and go from 3 to 3.5 to 4. And if you do that, then you'll be fine.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And that's just, you know, it's a forced savings plan, and we tell our clients you cannot miss that free money. You need to go and grab that free money that the company that you're working for is willing to match you. You know, so, you know, those financial goals, Jack, I know you and Maureen sit down more than once a year to go over things. But one of the things, too, that we do more often, but it's good to always review your portfolio holdings. You know, if you have stocks in there, mutual funds, you want to review how those stocks have been doing. You want to look at the mutual funds and their expenses. You want to look at the mutual funds and the managers. Have there been changes? And that really brings me to a point here that, you know, if you own individual stocks or mutual funds and it's in just a regular brokerage account, you need to really watch that closely. Or if you have a managed account or what we call a fee-based account, here's something that gets adjusted, changed, rebalanced as market conditions change, your age, your goals. And if one of the mutual funds falls out of favor or a manager has changed, we're going to change that. You know, and you don't have to wait around for an annual review.
Yeah, you know, probably the biggest thing, you know, step back and say, okay, what's my asset allocation? Asset allocation is really based a lot on your risk tolerance and how much money you have. You know, most people today, Carrie, think that their risk tolerance is growth in income, which is a split of 65% equities, 35% in some kind of income-producing event. So, but then you really get down to it, well, I want to be more aggressive. Everybody wants to be aggressive when the market's doing fine.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
And then nobody wants to be aggressive when the market's not doing fine. You should actually think opposite. You know, when the things are just beaten down, that's when you want to buy growth. That's when you want to be aggressive. Wealthy people buy things on sale. They don't buy things when they're really frothy. And so when everybody's talking at the cooler of this is what I did last year, you might want to say, you know, I only buy stuff when it's on sale. You know, when you go to Yonkers or you go to Macy's or wherever you go, Kohl's, you need to buy stuff on sale. So, you know, really get excited when you have these days of the market's down. Oh, man, that's the day to buy.
Mm-hmm.
You know, dollar cost average in. So it's so you really need to take a look at your asset allocation and say, how much should I have in large cap, mid cap, small cap, international emerging markets, natural resources, you know, some of those healthcare funds. You know, where are my assets out? You know, where are they, and is it a good mix?
Well, and another thing I always like to point out, because we get this question a lot this year. The market is up, or what we call the S&P 500, which is 500 large company stocks, which is used to measure the overall market, is up over 18% year to date. And when people come in and say, well, why is my portfolio only up 7 or only up, you know, 6? Well, you have to step back and you cannot compare apples and oranges, because when you look at your portfolio, as Jack mentioned, having a proper asset allocation means investments in different buckets, from growth to medium to small companies to value companies to international. The S&P 500 is made up of 500 U.S. companies.
Yeah, and that's really where it gets down to what is your goals. And, you know, we've had people call in of customers and say, well, why am I only up 6? And I go, well, that's your risk tolerance. I mean, you are all in income-producing products that we want to keep your $100,000, but we're shipping you $500 a month, which is $6,000 a year. Yeah, I remember you talking about that. Now, if you can keep your assets and still have us ship you 6% a year, or 5% or 7%. Those are some things that's you. I mean, most people think because they have an account with us, they're all in the market. Oh, my heavens, the market was up $200 today or 200% today. How come I wasn't up? Well, you're not in any equities.
Yeah, you're not in. You need, when you're comparing, you need to compare apples to apples, not apples to oranges. So, yes, the S&P 500 is a common benchmark that's used, but you need to remember where your investments are at and how they're balanced out. Because if you have all large companies and in those 500 stocks, yeah, then you're going to match, come to closing to that return. But if you don't, you can't compare.
No, and you look at higher risk this year. Higher risk is always small companies. Small companies, which are nimble, and this year it's been a good year for them to be productive. They're up over 30% year to date. Those are big numbers. I'm happy with 6 to 8%. This has been 10%. You know, I mean, it's 30%, which is way above. You know, that's 4 years worth,
mm-hmm.
all in 1 year. So,
yeah.
But they're really volatile. You know, next year it could be down 25%.
Yeah, those things happen. You know, as people review your financial goals, if you're a married couple with children, one of the things that you want to consider is, you know, planning and saving for college. And one of the regular ways to do that is just monthly putting money into a college 529 plan. And when this money goes in, it grows. And when you take it out, all that growth is tax-free if it's used for higher education. That's room and board, tuition, books, stuff that is used for college. But now, here's one thing people get sometimes so caught up in this. I had a customer in, a couple actually, and we're talking about, hey, they need to get saving for college. I said, not until you fill up your Roth. I looked at the husband and wife. I said, you both have to fully fund your retirement accounts first before you start putting money into the college 529 plans. And sometimes people tend to forget that. They start worrying too much about the college costs, or they're, you know, helping their kids out, which, you know, I want to help my kids out, but you need to fill up your Roth IRAs.
Well, I mean, that, you know, all of this depends on, again, Kerry, how much people make. You know, going back to you, you know, you posted me a $40,000 question. You know, sometimes, you know, two people working only make $40,000. So, you know, we always have to adjust our thoughts to every individual who comes into our office. Not one person is the same. Can't treat them the same, can't invest the same. You know, that's one thing about us is we're very unique. So, you know, one of the things we forgot about when we talked about financial goals is matching your strategy with your time horizon. So if you don't need the money for 10 years, that gives us some other food for thought. I mean, 10 years is a long time. If you look at any 10 years in the market, you know, you've made 8 to 10%. But you get those blips of 5 years, some people only made 3 to 4% in 5 years. So you need to take a look at what's your time frame and what's your risk tolerance within that time frame.
Absolutely. You know, another thing as you go through your annual checkup, and we still run into people today, mortgage. What are you paying on your mortgage? What's your goal? We talked about with our building just the other day, and we figured that with our goal was 10 years. And so we looked up what it would take to pay monthly to have this paid off in 10 years. So it meant increasing our monthly payment a little bit. But in the long term, it's knocking off 5 years and saving a ton of interest that way.
Yeah.
Now, on your home, this is something you need to be checking. Checking on what your current mortgage payments are, your current interest rate. Interest rates are still very low right now. You definitely want to be reviewing that. Do you want to make an extra mortgage payment a year, which is like a 13th payment? And that saves interest and cuts down years. So there's a lot of strategies behind that. So make sure you look at your mortgage, check it. Check what interest rate you're paying on it, and it may make sense to refinance. It has to fit, though.
No, and it has to fit. You know, you can't believe how many people that have refinanced, Kerry. I thought refinancing was over, and I ask them that question. And when I interview them, it's like, well, do you have a mortgage? Well, yeah, I do. Well, what's your rate? 5.5. And I go, well, how many more years you got left? Well, 12. And I go, you need to refinance.
Yeah.
They could shave a couple points off that today.
Mm-hmm.
Is it going to cost you money? I go, absolutely, it's going to cost you money. But is it a savings over the long run? Well, I don't know. Well, I mean, you just need to look at it, do your homework. And this is the prime time for everybody out there to take a look at their rates. I mean, if you're north of 4%, you can refinance. North of 4%, you can refinance.
Yep.
Now, I say that with precaution to say, and disclaimer is, are you employed? You know, is your house sellable? Are you not underwater with your house? Do you have at least 20, 25% down? Those are all things you need to have to refinance.
Mm-hmm. I mean,
what's your, you know, once you have a loan to the company, well, as long as you make your payment, they never look at you. But once you try to refinance, oh, your wife doesn't work anymore. Oh, you just haven't, you have a leased car. Oh, you're doing this payment. Sometimes, even though nothing's changed with you, things have changed.
Mm-hmm. Oh, definitely.
And, hard to say that.
Yeah, and that's one of our things, our goals for our people is we need to evaluate the changes that happen. You know, what has happened in the past. We also need to try to anticipate what's going to happen in the near future. Nobody has the crystal ball. But what I'm talking about, evaluating what you may have coming up in the near future would be, okay, is retirement 5 years away? You need to, you know, that's your goal. You need to look at some changes that, to the portfolio. Are you a younger couple, a son or daughter that will be going to college in, let's say, 8 years? You need to look at that and say, okay, what do we need to do now so we have X number of dollars at year number eight to help John in college? So those, you need to evaluate those changes along the way. Other things to always review is like this beginning of the year for my wife as a teacher, for your wife too, Jack, is that evaluating changes to the health care, a health savings account, a health spending account. Those are all things that when you teachers start the beginning of the year, they need are asked to reevaluate to look at if there's any changes. So those are some good timely things that happen, but you need to at least do these things minimum once a year.
No, and when you're employed out there, you know, they ask you once a year to review your benefits. And, you know, that is basically, you know, you are, when you have life insurance, you're buying a 1 year term policy. It's group insurance, but it's still a 1 year term policy because every year your age goes up and every year your premium goes up. So, you know, that's important.
Yeah, so listeners, we're going to take a short break. We're going to be back with more information on what you should cover on your annual financial checkup. And you're listening to WHTC Money Matters. This is Carrie Cooley.
And Jack Godfrey. We'll be right back for our last segment.
Hey, welcome back, listeners. This is WHTC Money Matters with your host, Carrie Cooley.
And Jack Godfrey. Hey, today we're talking about annual financial checkups, and we've been through, well, you know, your financial goals and college and mortgages. This is a pre-recorded show for November 30th. We're off eating turkey, leftovers.
And watching football.
Hopefully the Lions will be still lost only one game.
Yeah. That would be pretty cool this year.
That'd be really cool. So, okay, we're evaluating, again, we've talked about goals, asset allocation, portfolio holdings, your strategic, you know, what's your goal for your time horizon and your risk management? Are you putting money away for grandkids and your own kids for college? Have you refinanced your mortgage? You know, so what happened this past year that you need to reevaluate your changes? Were you taking too much risk? Did you roll over your 401k? What needs to happen this year that's going to affect near-time future stuff? Are you going to be taking Social Security next year? What's the planning process? Have you done a financial plan? So next thing is really assessing your insurance policies.
And those insurance policies include not only just your life insurance, but it includes your health insurance, your auto, and your home insurance policies, because there's a lot of times that, and here's a good example, boys are off to school, they have a computer from school, and we're required to have insurance on that. So we go to our, you know, insurer, and that has to be added on as a little rider. But then at the same time, you need to review what else you're paying for with some of these extra riders, because some of these things you don't need. So it's good to sit down with your insurance agent once a year, or at least you know, do a phone conference with them and review what you have. You know, have you chosen deductibles that provide lower premiums that, you know, will provide you can accept that level of risk? You know, those are things that you have to sometimes evaluate when you look at your budgeting. You need to look at, hey, maybe I can increase my deductible, lower my premium, and hey, understanding that you're willing to take that little extra risk on yourself.
Well, it really, you know, it's we're so engaged in health insurance, the rising premium and the deductibles. You know, we have a health savings account, which has worked perfectly for us. We have a $2,500 deductible. For most people, that seems like a lot, but when you're 61, $2,500 is used up pretty quick. Mm-hmm. And then 100% is paid.
Yep.
We have a lower premium and $2,500 deductible. Then after that, everything is paid.
100%.
So now, that's where good for us.
Now, does that include medicine or is that a separate policy?
That includes medicine now.
Okay.
That includes medicine now. So, you know, that adds up pretty quickly. So you have to think your house the same way is if you own your house, you have very little debt, and you're able to reevaluate your house premium. You've never had a claim on your house insurance. Well, why aren't you doing a $25,000 or $5,000 deductible? That's really going to lower your premium.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, you need to think about self-insurance. I mean, self-insurance says, okay, we have enough of emergency money in our account to cover that $5,000 deductible. Now, if you've got $250 in your savings account and nothing in your checking account, well, then you ought to go back to a $500 or $250 deductible because it doesn't make sense. But, you know, some of these people have large savings accounts. They should have a higher deductible because it makes sense for them.
Mm-hmm. Oh, absolutely. The other thing you need to look at under insurance is an umbrella policy for potential large, you know, damages, claims. Do you have enough life insurance? And that's always a common question that we get asked a lot. What's enough life insurance? Well, at the minimum, if you're married and have debt out there, you need at least to have enough life insurance to pay off your debt if something happens. Now, the next step from there is usually, okay, I have that base covered. I have enough to pay off debt, but I want to make sure that my spouse, if I should pass away, I want my income replaced. Well, then you're looking at a higher number.
Oh, absolutely. And, you know, going back to that carry life insurance policies, I try to counsel people the fact that we can get you 5 or 6% in the market. And your debt is this size, and if your debt is this size, and we can get you 5 or 6%, you know, let's just say your mortgage is 3%. Well, why would you want to pay off your house when we can get you 5 or 6%?
Yeah, it makes total sense.
Well, it does, but it's hard for people to understand that. Well, and once they get it, they get it.
Yeah, and especially those people that want to have debt paid off, which I think is a good thing. I mean, when you're wired that way and you don't like to have debt, you know, it's hard to do what Jack just said, is to make 6% of your money and borrow at 3, but it makes total sense.
Well, it does if you're not blowing the money some other place, but if you're going to blow the money, then this doesn't work out. Doesn't work out whatsoever. So, you know, now we're to reviewing your will, trust, you know, estate plan. Make sure that you've reviewed that. So, you know, when I say review that, is there been any changes? Divorces, additional grandkids, marriages, you know, divorce, well, whatever it is, then you need to make sure there's some changes to your will and estate plan. But, you know, those are some things that, you know, we just went and reviewed ours. You know, lots of grandkids, all of our grandkids, since we've updated our will and our trust. So we just went through and did that. And make sure that you have, if you do have a trust and you want to make sure that you do some type of quick claim deed to move money to the trust upon your death. You know, those are some things that Mary Jo Borman in her office really does a good job at. And, you know, you just need to have a review. Some people have a deceased member now as their, you know, power of attorney. Well, you know, you haven't switched that. You know, who do you have? Who are you giving money to? Now, all of a sudden, you know, they go 20 years and they think, wow, we have a lot of money. Well, we want to give some of this money to charity. Well, I say, well, why don't you want to create a foundation in your name? And then you give 4 or 5% proceeds to that charity every year, and it just keeps on giving forever.
Yeah.
And that's a nice deal.
Yeah, it's a nice deal, and it's a way that families and kids can carry on that legacy as even when you're gone. You know, the other things under a will and an estate plan is to have your health care directive and your financial power of attorney should all be included, and they need to be reviewed, as Jack said, on a regular basis, because there's a lot of times we find that things are outdated, beneficiaries haven't been updated, These are all things that get missed quite often, so you need to make sure that you do that.
Well, and you also want to make sure who's your successor trustee. You know, husband and wife are typically the trustees for each other. Then after that, who's the successor? Now, many people don't have children. So who's going to take the lead for them? Is it an uncle? No, they're probably, you know, uncle's probably gone. Is it a financial institution, a trust department? Well, maybe. But who's going to step up and be the successor trustee? And then who's going to disperse this money? So lots of times people have bank trust departments, and sometimes bank trust departments are now gone.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Their local bank has now been bought out twice.
Yeah. And the trust department, a lot of times when they get bought out, you don't have a local representative anymore. It could be somebody in New York or Columbus, Ohio.
Pittsburgh.
Yep. Exactly. And you want somebody local. You want somebody you know. Now, you know, as we talk about annual reviews, make an appointment with your financial advisor, because you need to review, as we mentioned earlier, asset allocation, your goals, what are coming up. These are things you need to set an appointment with your financial advisor.
Yep. I mean, it's in every year you need to say, okay, honey, let's take a look at what we're doing for spending. What trips are we going to take this year? How much are we going to put away for savings? How much are we going to give for Christmas gifts and birthday gifts? You know, you need to take a look and say, what's our budget? What's our budget going to be next year? Are we taking two trips, no trips? Where are we going to spend our money? How much are you going to make? Are you going to get a raise? So evaluating and creating some type of spending plan is appropriate.
Definitely. You need to do that. And it's just not one spending plan. That's why you come back yearly and review it. You want to know where things are going. Things change. Another thing to do is review your income taxes. If you work with a tax planner, you know, talk to them. You know, are there some things that you're missing as far as uncovered tax deductions that you might not know about? You know, are you withholding enough? Are you making enough in estimated tax payments so that you don't have a big surprise at the first quarter of the following year? You know, have you considered deferring income into the next year? If you're a small business owner, do you buy some equipment this year to reduce taxes? So those are all things that you should be reviewing at this time.
Well, and then, you know, the biggest part, Carrie, is especially for older people who are in a 15% tax bracket, you know, we want to make sure we evaluate, should you be converting some IRAs to Roth, keep you in the 15% tax bracket, because you know your kids today are in a 25% tax bracket. You, as the parent, pay the taxes at 15, because they're going to get the money either way. You know, you need to be philanthropic to your kids. And most people, well, do I have enough? Well, you're not spending it now. Why don't you spend it, pay the taxes, and give it to your kids at a cheaper rate? Forget that.
And we get some clients that say, hey, I'm not leaving anything to my kids. I'm going to spend it all. You know, you get that
that's
too.
That's why.
And that's okay. It's their money. But I love how Jack has mentioned here on the show, it's so important. You need to think of passing on wealth, and how can you do that efficiently from a tax standpoint so the government doesn't get that money. And it makes total sense, if you're in a lower tax bracket, to have switch it over to Roth. We're doing that with my parents. And instead of my brother and I as beneficiaries, we've put the grandkids as beneficiaries. It makes total sense in this case. Now, in other cases, the uniqueness of your family situation may be totally different.
Yeah. Last thing we have, Carrie, is making sure that you are looking at your individual retirement goals. What's it going to take to get you to 70, 66, 65, 62? What's it going to take for you to get there with a comfortable retirement? And, you know, we do financial planning for people. We can look with inflation, with escalators of putting more money away as you get older. What's it going to look like? You should start this process at age 50. Start it. Look at the numbers.
Yeah. And, you know, that's my age this year. And so, you know, I'm looking at it, not that I didn't ever look at it. It's just I'm looking at probably a little bit more with a fine-tuned comb and getting some more details there. Set up annual meeting with important people in your life. You know, who's the executor of your estate? Do you have a brother or sister, or, you know, it's parents. You know, like my brother and I have sat down with my parents and discussed their estate plan and what their wishes are and who's going to be the executor of the estate. And those are just important meetings. I know people don't always like to talk about end-of-life situations, but you need to talk to people about these things and how you want your wishes carried out and make sure those wishes are on paper.
So we've had a good financial plan checkup, give you lots of things to think about, but those are some things that you should at least talk about once a year for your annual financial checkup. If not, you know, make those checkups when special events occur. You know, we like to do that maybe quarterly or semi-annually, but annual financial checkoffs are good.
Well, and the other thing, too, one last thing, too, I always like to mention, get your files in shape. You know, especially it makes tax time easier. Shred documents that you don't need to keep. You know, you don't need to keep everything, but ask. And we have a checklist within our office that tells you what are important documents to keep and how long to keep them. So that's another thing that's always good to do, because sometimes you can build up so much of this paper that, you know, you don't know what to do with it all.
No. Hey, our next week program is going to be the best Christmas gift ever, and that would be putting away money for your children or grandchildren in a college savings account. That's a great gift.
It is. It is an awesome gift. Listeners, we want to thank you for listening today. Happy Thanksgiving to everybody. I hope that you're enjoying time with your family and friends. And we want to invite you back next week, and we will be live the following week here. So this is Kerry Cooley.
And this is Jack Godfrey. Have a great weekend.